Hi, this is David Evans here. I am substituting for the illustrious Karen Webster, who is ordinarily the host of Matchmakers. I'm the author, as some of you may know, of Matchmakers, The New Economics of Multi-Sided Platforms, which is the inspiration for the series. I am joined today by David Baird of Gigmore, who's based in Santa Monica. David, thanks a lot for joining us.
Hey, thanks. Yeah, great to be here.
So, interesting name for a platform these days, Gigmore. So let me start with kind of a big question and let you talk a little bit to it. What problem are you solving and how are you going about doing it? And assume that the audience knows nothing about Gigmore.
Sure. We're solving the problem of helping what we call talent seekers find, book, and ultimately pay live musical talent. So talent seekers include music clubs, festivals, private parties, really runs the gamut. But the problem right now is that
so this would be like I need someone from my wedding, and I go to you guys to get a musician?
Yes. Yes, and right now there's no real central destination for any of these people. So we built a platform that's designed to serve the needs of talent seekers in order to find the right talent, evaluate that talent, and book it, and as I said, ultimately pay them. So the problem right now is it's even professional talent buyers have trouble finding qualified acts who will bring a crowd and obviously put on a great show, and they have to jump around and check social media links and YouTube and Spotify plays if they're there. So the information needed to evaluate and book talent is widely dispersed. So one of the things we've done is centralize that information to one artist profile. You know, similarly, since we're talking marketplaces and that's what we are, artists have a comparable problem on their end. They don't know really what venues are appropriate for them to approach and where they should play. Once they even understand, you know, this venue would be good for them, they have to send an unsolicited email to kind of an anonymous address, and then nothing happens. So they have a kind of B2B marketing challenge in trying to get on the radar screen of people who might hire them. And overall, it's a very, very, very inefficient, time-consuming process for both sides.
So this sounds like a marketplace where there's an awful lot of friction. So I kind of get the need there. But before you guys came along, how did artists and venues hook up? I mean, there must have been some intermediaries or some way that all happened.
Well, yeah, the traditional way that happened was a booking agent who could be somebody at a WME or a CAA, for a very high level of artists who are, earning lots of money from their gigs. Then there was sort of a middle ground of booking agents who were kind of loan agents, who had relationships with some bars in a specific area. Basically kind of local guys with a cell phone.
Mm-hmm.
But in addition to that, what has developed, since venues created websites and bands created websites in the last, 15 years roughly, is a lot of unsolicited email that, as I mentioned before, that the band sends to a venue, and the venue often gets 100 of these emails a day and has to kind of sort through them to find out, who they should hire. The other way that is commonly used these days is referrals. So mm-hmm. if a band has kind of broken through with a venue and been successful, performing there, they may say, hey, we got some buddies, they got a band, you should check them out. So obviously that's a way that sort of we're not trying to compete with that. We're trying to compete with the email inbox issue.
And when did you start Gigmore?
Well, Gigmore has been around for 3 years, and our first phase was as a musician matching site. So we were artist-centric. We called ourselves LinkedIn for Musicians, mm-hmm. addressing a slightly different problem of the fact that musicians who want to form a band have trouble finding compatible players in their area.
You're matching musicians with other musicians to help help fill places in bands and things like that.
Exactly. And what we found was, and there's a high turnover in bands. You know, a bass player, a drummer leave. I was in a band once. We practically never had the same drummer for more than a month, which had a rotating drum chair. So this is a common problem. That's how we started, and we grew to about 50,000 artists. At the same time, however, we always had the plan to evolve into this marketplace. That was the grand plan. We knew that was a big opportunity, and it would be a lot easier, as you know from studying marketplaces, to start off with a critical mass of musicians than to start from scratch. So we launched the new site, the marketplace, this last summer.
Wow. Okay, that's an interesting. That's a really interesting strategy. What was the inspiration for you to tackle this particular problem? I mean, lots of problems that entrepreneurs like you can tackle. Why did you fall into this one?
Well, totally personal experience. Really, I've been in bands since I was in college, and it was always a serious passion on the side for me. I like to say I play music. I don't play golf.
And, what do you play?
I play guitar, and most of the bands I've been in are blues, funk, soul, some jazz, some funky jazz. So that's kind of, my genre, my preferred genre. And I moved around a lot, so every city that I moved to, I kind of had to recreate a band. Mm-hmm. And not only did I then experience problem one, finding compatible players, I also was really invariably the band leader and experienced problem two in trying to get gigs. Along the way, during my career, I ended up at AOL and obviously was equally passionate and experienced in technology. So moving to LA, as we did about 14 years ago, I found myself facing both those problems. How do I find players? How do I find places to play? And that was really the genesis of Gigmore. I thought I'm going to put music and tech together to solve this problem, because I knew millions of musicians had the same issue.
Now, this is a really fragmented business, a really fragmented marketplace. You have lots of different kinds of music, artists, events, and so forth, from classical to jazz and from weddings to big events. I mean, it seems like there's a lot of fragmentation here. So I'm curious, how are you going about tackling getting enough density of demand and supply in each of those narrow categories in order to facilitate matching, in order to get enough liquidity into the marketplace?
Great question. We are serving a pretty specific category, albeit one that also still is fragmented, and that is music clubs and otherwise known as venues. We're doing that because we see that as the best way to start. They have the greatest frequency of need. There's clubs that hire 50 bands a week, but even if they have music two, three, four nights a week, obviously they need new artists every week. So that was point one. Point two, if we onboard venues to kind of and who will populate the marketplace and be the kind of premier talent seekers, if you will, it'll be easier for us to go and do other segments later. We've always seen some activity, and in fact, in the first site, the LinkedIn for Musicians site, we had about 1,000 people who kind of hacked into that site looking to discover and book talent. But a portion of them were event planners. So we know event planners are not really that well-versed in hiring music. They don't do it for a living, but a lot of events obviously have live music. So that's a category we think we want to, you know, move into, and it's kind of encompassed in a kind of a broad-based do-it-yourself category of individuals hiring bands. But our focus is on music venues because
so you're starting out really by narrowing things down to music clubs, and I gather to the kind of musicians who would be interested in music clubs and the kind of musicians that music clubs would be interested in hiring. So you've kind of narrowed it down to that segment of the market just to kick things off.
Yes, well said. And so we call them emerging artists, clubs, and the other kind of segmentation we've done is we're looking at a small to medium-sized club. Obviously, there's a kind of a floor to in terms of capacity below which a lot of larger companies will not go. We look at clubs that are up to about between 350 and 500 capacity. Mm-hmm. Because they tend to be smaller operations, who don't use, some of the bigger competitors or the sort of high-end AEGs and Live Nations in this business. So that we further
and presumably not going after the more successful already established artists. I mean, you're concentrating on more of the up-and-coming crowd?
Yes, exactly. In general, those emerging artists, kind of mirror the fact that a smaller club is a small local business, really. And those emerging artists don't have, necessarily a manager or an agent or a label, all of the things that create some infrastructure around them and help them when they get to, a higher level, book tours. And by the way, that's the vast majority of musicians. There's 15 to 20,000 represented artists in the U.S., and there's millions of musicians and bands who live in this do-it-yourself world. So, but the key ones that interest the venues the most, the thing that interests the venues the most is those who can bring a crowd. But finding the next Imagine Dragons or the next, Kanye on the way up is really the thing that really works for them. So we're focused on those emerging artists particularly.
And what's your business model? How are you either making money now, or how are you planning to make money? Assuming you are.
Well, for the moment, we're free for everybody. And as you know, kickstarting a marketplace, takes a lot to get it going. So we don't want to add, some kind of extra payment as a barrier to anybody to participate in the marketplace. We will. Our model is artist-based subscriptions, which is still a freemium model because artists will be able to join and create a profile, interact with other artists, and do a whole bunch of things for free. But access to the paying gigs would require a modest monthly subscription.
So I'm curious, if you go back to sort of the traditional physical world, where you have brokers who are matching up musicians and venues and so forth. In that world, who pays whom? Do the artists give a cut to the to their yes they do give a cut to their agent, and the venue the venue doesn't pay? Is that how it works?
Exactly.
So you're mimicking I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, no, a booking agent takes usually 15%, between 10 and 15%, and that comes out of the artist's the gross fee for the artist. So the artist has a lower net after that than the gross amount that they're allegedly paid. Yeah, and the venue typically doesn't pay.
So you're mimicking the economics that already exists in the friction-laden physical marketplace world.
Yes, exactly.
Got it. You mentioned that you're at Amazon. I mean, from looking at your bio,
AOL.
It looks like you're. Pardon me.
Yeah, it was at AOL, actually.
At AOL. Anything you learned from AOL that gave you either inspiration for this or told you informed things that you probably shouldn't be doing? Any lessons
actually,
from that experience?
Well, I started out at AOL as the manager of the finance channel, mm-hmm. and was able to see how technology revolutionized the kind of the world of personal investing. Before we came along, people, checked their stock prices in the newspaper the next day. So we brought kind of industrial strength information and tools to individual investors, and then, of course, added in the online trading. So I watched how that grew and how the advantages of our technology platform just drove very rapid growth by creating so much value, that, mm-hmm. that hadn't really existed. So I take a lot from that, and I feel we're in a category that's a kind of ripe for innovation, I would say. I don't necessarily use the word disruption, but it's ripe for innovation, ripe for this kind of using technology to create a lot more convenience and time savings. Marketplaces have enormous advantages over offline solutions.
Yeah, and this is certainly an area where the frictions are just immense. So I can definitely see the opportunity for coming up with a marketplace solution here. You said that you launched the marketplace this summer. How are things going? And as you look forward over the next couple of years, where do you think you're gonna see the biggest challenges?
It's going great. We found that venues need some kind of education about the platform.
Mm-hmm.
We're so steeped in it. We know what the value is. I've been in this business for 20 years. To me, it's a slam dunk. In the real world, people are wearing multiple hats at a venue, making sure, what happened to that bartender who called in sick? Oh, by the way, we need a band for next Wednesday. They don't have a lot of time. And just sending them an email saying, hey, we've got a great solution is not good enough. So we've discovered that venues need, I'm sure you've studied Airbnb in the early days, as
yeah.
I have, some sort of hand-holding, some non-scalable ways of bringing them on board. I think that's going to get easier and easier as we gain more critical mass, as some better-known venues come on board, some of those we have already. We're in the early stages of understanding the dynamics of this marketplace, making sure that when a venue posts a gig, that the right talent, is made aware that they should apply to that gig, because that's the model we've adopted.
And are you focused? Are you guys focused geographically? Are you concentrating on LA, for example, or are you trying to do this on a broader scale?
We are largely focused on LA because of our location and because that's the place we can go out and have these meetings. But we have salespeople in Dallas and Denver and New York, and we're looking to kind of expand beyond that, but kind of a model of regional sales or business development to basically match our artist base who are, across North America, both U.S. and Canada. We have a strong member base of artists in pretty much every, major metropolitan area.
And the musicians, at least, are accustomed to traveling. I'm not sure if it's true with the group that you're matching up, but the musician side of the marketplace is obviously less local than the venue side. Is that the case that you expect that the musicians in LA are probably going to be competing for jobs outside of LA?
To some degree, I think right now we're seeing it. It's a local business where the artists we have on board are typically looking for local gigs, and the venues are typically looking for local bands. Although obviously they don't really care as long as again they bring a crowd. What we're wanting to evolve into is finding ways, through obviously calendar technology and mapping technology, to help artists go to the next level of creating tours. And obviously touring can get very complex. But at the sort of the emerging artist level, there's an opportunity to kind of help them package a tour up with, hitting six venues on six different nights that geographically make sense. We're not there yet, but we think that's one of the next steps in our evolution.
Are the broader dynamics going on in the music business, the massive move to streaming music and Spotify and Pandora, making things easier for the artists in the long tail? Is that affecting your business, or how do you see any of that kind of fitting in with your marketplace and kind of the evolution of the business?
Well, on paper, it looks like a band could get wide distribution compared to sort of the days of having to wait to get signed by a label and letting the label handle that. Mm-hmm. So in theory, digital distribution, even iTunes sales before streaming, meant that a local artist could go global. And the same is true of streaming. But the fact of the matter is, there's not sort of an automatic process there. And now to get your band on Spotify, is not just as simple as just signing up and submitting a song. So those streaming services still serve to some degree as gatekeepers, but not nearly the same way, not in nearly the same restrictive way that labels did. So I think there is a big opportunity that a band in Sweden could gain a U.S. audience through a streaming site and then want to tour in the U.S. To build that fan base. Before that was, again, kind of handcrafted and done, by people at labels. And now it's, again, it's part of that do-it-yourself world for artists.
And to what extent is Gigmore providing information to the venues on the quality of the musicians? I mean, do you have anything systematic there, or do you envision doing that?
We envision that very much in the near term. We think that data is going to be a big part of live music booking in the future. It already is to a degree at the higher end, but if you get outside AEG and Live Nation, nobody really has either access to the right data about artists and their fan bases, or if they do, they can't really. It's too hard for them to understand and make good use of. So we think there to offer data that will help take some of the risk out of booking decisions for, again, these small to medium-sized venues.
We're going to be ending soon, and just a couple of last questions for you. One is not really about your marketplace, but in terms of inspiration for you and other marketplaces or platforms out there that you admire, if you had to name one, and in the old days, they had to tell people not to say Uber, but I think people tend not to say Uber anymore. But if you had to mention one platform that you really admire and that has provided inspiration, and if you want to say Uber, that's fine. What would it be?
Right. No, I think it would be Airbnb. It's very analogous to our model for a lot of reasons, and I've from looking at Bill Gurley's blog posts, and more recently, Reid Hoffman did a podcast with Brian Chesky. the stories about their launch fascinate me and inspire me, particularly how they were focused, you know, on staying close to their early customers in helping them, you know, devise their product priorities and how to build not just something that worked, but how to build kind of a dream product for the early people who were putting their, you know, apartments and homes. I would break your rule by adding one other that I think did an amazing job, and that's OpenTable, which also yep. has a lot of analogies to what we're doing.
Yeah, OpenTable is one of my favorites, one of my all-time favorites. What's your advice? This is completely unrelated to marketplaces, but kind of tied to your career and what you've been doing. What's your advice to a kid who's just gotten their training and needs to start actually making money as a musician?
Understand that you're not just an artist. You're an entrepreneur, or if you're a band, you're a small business. And mm-hmm. it may seem antithetical to the creative side of you. I know many musicians, and I know it is, but it's a career like any other. And the people who have successful careers in that realm, you know, obviously are very talented musically, but they're able to pair that with the sort of chutzpah and the drive and the marketing savvy that helps them, you know, build their career. So don't shy away from that.
It seems like good advice to anyone getting out of college or school these days. David, thank you very much. This is a really interesting business, and we wish you all the success with it, and I hope to be able to use it at some point the next time I need a musician. And unfortunately, in my case, I'm not a musician, so I won't be signing up for that side of the platform, but perhaps for the event side of the platform at some point.
Well, that's great. We'd love to have you, obviously. So thank you so much. Really enjoyed it.
Very good. Thanks a lot, David. Take care. Yeah, bye-bye.
You too. Bye.